When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, everyone. So game week 6 has ended, and it was quite an unusual one, with key assets across the board exploding, some owned, some not, throughout the weekend, leading to the midweek ranks, well, violently rollercoastering up and down, I'd say, return by return, culminating in Newcastle's riotous 8-0 victory over the blunted blades of Sheffield United. That meant a red arrow dispatch for any non-owners of a Newcastle player, I'm sure is the truth. I'm Tom, I'm here, but no beer this week because I'm still recovering from FPL meets on Saturday. It was a good day, a good evening as well. I'm interested to hear if I'm more lucid or not. It's sad though, Sam, without the booze, I'm actually starting to think, you know, and, hear the thoughts and, you know, anyway, no, clearly I'm not more lucid without the beer, without the booze. There you go. And Sam's back.
Any references to Saturday will involve a lot of alcohol. So if we're at all rusty today, I do apologise. But hopefully, because neither of us will be drinking through this pod, our thoughts will be fairly fresh if our minds are not so much. But yeah, we both were at FPL meets on Saturday. We both seemed to enjoy ourselves quite a lot. I think you left a little bit earlier, but I did. I wasn't far behind you. So yeah, the Sunday matches didn't feel too good on a hangover with, like you say, quite a lot of the highly owned assets that I didn't own doing quite well. So that was a bit of a ropey day on Sunday, but definitely worth all of the fun of Saturday evening. So yeah, hello. We are Who Got the Assist. On today's pod, we're going to be talking a lot about FOMO. So how do we manage this? Some of the potential FOMO busters for the next couple of weeks, especially if you're one among us who are looking at wildcarding around game week 9 or game week 10. And then, of course, the ultimate FOMO in Mo Salah from game week 9, especially onwards, the butterfly effect of moves that some of us already made, including myself and you, Tom, have already potentially sealed our fate slightly. So we're going to be having a look at how that might be affecting us in weeks to come. Before moving on to bold claims, once again, some listener questions. So thank you all for them. And we'll have a look at our teams before we move into game week 7. Just for anyone listening, we're recording on Monday, the 25th of September. So hangovers are luckily gone now. An old school weekend, no matches on Monday today. So the game week is over and done with, so we can talk about game week 6 and everything that went down over the weekend in full capacity.
Yep, good. Right, scores on the doors. Let's see how we have done. Who is first? Oh, it's me. Well, I think the first thing to mention is that neither of us have a green arrow this season. Not one between the two of us. It's pretty pathetic, especially as we both run a podcast. And what can you say? I got 77 this week, which is not a bad score by any stretch of the imagination. I took a hit. I did bring in Alvarez, as I was discussing with Nick on the last pod. I also brought in Trippier. I basically had a choice between Saliba and Chilwell. And I told myself, you know, there's a good chance Chilwell's going to play because Mudryk wasn't great last game. And lo and behold, obviously, Mudryk did start and Chilwell came on and managed to get himself a yellow card as well. So 0 points for him. Luckily, he matched the doggy who you played. But I think I'd have got a green arrow if I'd sold Saliba because I'd have played Kabore, who was on my bench, first bench, and he got an assist for a penalty that Calvin Morris scored. So very, very kind of fine margins there, I suppose, with everything. It was all really kind of looking a bit dodgy on Saturday evening. But on Sunday, Son with the brace, Saka with the goal and assist, and then the Trippier show with the three assists and the clean sheet, max bonus, and off a little bit earlier as well. Sweet 69-minute substitution. Very, very rescued what was looking like a plummet past the 2 million mark to kind of around the 1 point. I basically dropped 30k places, which is nothing really at the moment. But I think the main story really same for you, I think, Sam, was that literally everybody else that you could, like all the other rank threats did something. So Matoma, Salah, Maddison, Bruno Fernandes, Botman, who I didn't own, all of the players who could really damage my rank also went on and got double-digit hauls. So despite the fact I carried three actually, Haaland doesn't count with the captaincy, I didn't get anywhere, which is a little bit kind of frustrating. But hey-ho, we continue. We keep moving, I suppose. So yeah, no green arrow for me yet. Still marooned around kind of the 1.7 million mark. But I've still, as I was saying to Nick last week and to you the week before, I'm still not particularly interested in wildcarding just yet. What about you? How did you get on?
Yeah, so a couple of points less than you. 74 with the hit as well. My first hit of the season, leaving it at a net 70 overall. I did bring in Trippier for that 18 points like you. I sold Chilwell, so I did avoid that. But starting Odoghi, like you mentioned, didn't pay dividends at all. I did have a last minute flutter with starting Kabore, but I fancied the quality of Odoghi over Kabore in any fixture. Kabore with the assist, obviously, a little bit annoying, but at least that gives me a good enough reason to start him in double game week 7 because I was worried that maybe he might not be a good starter for even then. Elsewhere, Foden was my only other difference, I believe, to your team. I obviously got the goal, got the max bonus, but Son outscored him with 2 goals. So you are catching me up a little bit. We're probably almost at identical ranks at the moment. Yeah, not that we're really checking. But again, like you mentioned, no green arrows for me either this season so far. Very, very frustrating. And each week I'm getting a little bit more and more twitchy with the wildcard button. But I look at my side and I think genuinely there aren't too many problems there right now, especially with the fixtures to come. So we'll go into how our teams are shaping up ahead of double game week 7. Neither of us have Morris in situ at the moment, which we'll be discussing. But generally, I don't think the team's looking too bad. I think game week 6 was one of those weeks where a lot of very dangerous players went big. And equally, there were a lot of other, especially midfielders, that are just as likely to go big. The Mbeumo, Sterlings, okay, arguably Sterling maybe not as likely, but have that explosive potential in them that didn't go big. And you could have easily found yourself with the wrong five, the wrong combination of midfielders. And it seemed like one of those weeks where I was looking through X and it was just a sea of either euphoria or devastation with very little in between. So my condolences go out to you if you did have a rough game week 6. The season's long, you can get back on that horse, and hopefully that variance will swing in your favor once again next week and beyond, and fingers crossed that it finally favors us with a green arrow soon, Tom.
Yeah, certainly. I think it was with Newcastle result, particularly if you were without one, because it was like, you know, if you bought Shaw in this week, you can count yourself uniquely unlucky. So you burn Botman and also Trippier, of course, got double digit return. So it's one of those where if you got the best lottery ticket you possibly could, you're probably looking at over 100 this week. But on the other side of it, I've still seen a few people kind of with 50s and 60s. What can you say? These things happen, basically. Exactly. So I guess you're here again looking at, who do I bring in next? You know, how do I kind of look at what's going on with my team and trying to ameliorate the position I find myself in? We've seen this week after week after week, haven't we, Sam? With the pattern being Mbeumo in, or for you that was Foden in game week 3, followed by Sterling coming in, then Son coming in, last week Alvarez in. I think I stand by pretty much all of those this week with Alvarez. I mean, that's just X red card. I mean, how are you ever going to quantify that one? But the last 3 or 4 weeks do feel so FOMO heavy. FPL General on his 59th podcast reference kind of this being the season of FOMO a little bit, just because of how bad the kind of the grinding gears of moving in every player who has done something well have kind of spat out negative outcomes for the majority of us. I mean, it's clear that there's a whole sort of rump of us who are all the same sort of level. And those who've been able to resist the FOMO, or at least try to think ahead of the FOMO, have done very well for themselves. Joshua Biggs asked us to start us off. A big chunk of the community keeps finding itself a week behind on picks, players like I've referenced, Sterling, Alvarez, and this week Trippier being key examples. How do we start identifying these guys early? I mean, to be honest, if we knew the answer to that, I don't think we'd be we'd be as doing as badly, right? But it's certainly been quite a FOMO heavy season, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's easy to get sucked into some of these players because we know that they're explosive. We know that they've got that potential to haul. And then when they finally do go off, Son being a great example a few weeks ago, you see him, you know he's got the potential to keep going off, being used in a different position as well in his case. And it's really easy to just get suckered in, bring those players in straight away. Obviously, Son is a bit of a unique example, didn't explode the following week, but then in game week six did go off again, even against Arsenal. So I think with any of these players, Son, Sterling, Trippier as well being a great example, the fixtures do hopefully breed that form. And I think getting ahead of the template would mean almost looking at those fixtures ahead and trying to find a player that you think that the fixtures are going to favour. And Son, we probably could have seen coming if we took that panoramic view beforehand, looking at the fixtures. I don't think many of us expected him to start up front necessarily, but Spurs were coming into a great run of fixtures. And bringing in one of their players even before they started hitting form would have probably been a good idea. A lot of us brought in Madison, for example, beforehand. So I think it's fair enough that you go for the safer pick there. Alvarez as well, City did have good fixtures for quite a run. And with him, it was the case that all of a sudden he's getting 90 minutes. And for the value he's at, that's great. And I still don't think he's going to be a bad transfer in. Hopefully he'll continue to get good minutes. It was just slightly unfortunate not to get anything against Nottingham Forest. The game changed significantly when Rodri went off, and then obviously he came off shortly afterwards as well. So I think trying to look past the immediate performances after you bring in these players and look with a longer term view will be important in some of these cases. Son being a great example of that. Some of them don't pay off and haven't paid off so far, Sterling being one, but I think there's still time with Newcastle defence, for instance, with Alvarez, with Son. And just because they didn't pay off in the first game week after we all bought them in doesn't mean that they're not going to be good picks. And trying to take that panoramic long-term view will be helpful for not only our FPL scores, but also our mental health.
Yeah. Now, I like just to pick on a couple of kind of turns of phrase there. Like the fact that you're saying that we all bought them in, like our mental health and things like that, like using
yeah.
the collective. I think that's definitely kind of speaks to the psychology, I suppose, of what fear of missing out actually is. Like it's actually a relatively new phenomenon in terms of the academic record. It's about kind of responses to social media. I'm sure, you know, back in day, even if it was just kind of your friends, your family, your network, when you were using your landline phone to call other people, you still had FOMO, you know, keeping up the Joneses and things like that. But FOMO these days is, as you probably kind of guess, is sort of a negative emotional state resulting from kind of social relatedness and those sort of unmet needs that you've got. So it can exist kind of in the short term. So it can be something that kind of crops up in a conversation. So you can say, Sam, you know, oh, I've got enough money this week to buy this player. And I'd be like, oh, I can't get that player. Oh, suddenly, you know, it kind of generates a little kernel of doubt in me. And there can also be a long-term thing as well, where you kind of, you know, have you're envious of an individual. So you kind of follow someone on Instagram, like, oh, I really hate them, but I kind of want their life, like the cure. Why can't I be you? And I guess with social media, you've got so much exposure to what people are doing. And in FPL kind of terms, you can see that kind of writ large because you see what people are doing. You kind of hear a little bit about the thought processes. And you also see kind of the evidence of their decisions in terms of their overall rank. And there's this sort of continuous kind of uncertainty within yourself about whether you're doing enough. And if you are where you should be in terms of your rank. And a lot of the time with individual players, you do get that sort of sense of FOMO. Which you're kind of thinking, oh, God, X brought in Son last week. Well, you know, he's a really good player. Maybe I should be part of that and get involved with those sorts of things. And it, there's certainly this kind of need to belong, which is what FOMO sort of generates. And, you know, we talk a lot about kind of moving with the herd and herd mentality. And I think FOMO is kind of a very similar sort of effect, has a very similar effect to that, because you are just trying to cover yourself off effectively and ensure that you are part of the herd, you're not missing out on things. But in a game like this, we have created, as I mentioned earlier, that sort of big rump of people who are just all sat in kind of one homogenous blob. And I was saying to you at Meets, I think, and a few other people, that I've started to get a bit annoyed at myself for being so cautious with the moves I'm taking. I can understand exactly why I've done them. No, points are never boring. But if you do, this is before Alvarez went off, by the way. It's not kind of a knee jerk to Alvarez. But I was thinking, oh, it is kind of quite tiresome that I keep doing these sorts of moves. But I guess sort of Trippier was a bit of a thing. But I kind of come back to what I said last week about kind of see this being a bit of a season of moments at the moment, where you need something like our mate Fran, who was at the meetup on Saturday, having that kind of Sterling and Gusto thing in game week three, where suddenly you've got kind of 30 unique points and everybody else before the crowd come in. And this week we were hoping it would be the case of Trippier, and we were both praying for a goal to go in, you know, after he went off. But hey, there you go. I mean, do you kind of characterize FOMO as being a necessarily bad thing? Because academically it kind of is, but I think there are some protective elements, aren't there, which can be positive.
Yeah, I think in a game like FPL, we actually have a measurement for FOMO now, and that's effectively effective ownership. If you look at the effective ownership week to week, that is almost a direct correlation with who do I have the most FOMO of now, and looking at a player or knowing and predicting what a player's effective ownership will be in the week ahead actually is the thing that probably scares me the most about any player, especially if I know them to be explosive. Now, that is definitely a negative thing, and it shouldn't really be impacting your decision making. However, on the flip side, maybe there is that protective element that you mentioned, where effective ownership is actually there to be looked at, studied, and evaluated as a method of, do we think this player is worth betting against, or do we think that it's actually just a wise decision to be a part of the herd on this particular moment, as you put it earlier, and just make sure that nothing can really go wrong here. Haaland being a very good example of herd mentality in terms of effective ownership, 190% every single week. At the moment, that is a sensible call. No matter what, most of us are going to be Haaland captain, but there will come moments later on in the season where you look at that effective ownership, you think of FOMO versus what I could actually gain elsewhere. And actually, maybe there is a better captain. Game week 8 might be a great example when Spurs go up against Luton. The effective ownership for Haaland is still going to be 150% plus, but maybe that FOMO doesn't quite outweigh the benefit that you can get from another player. Maybe you actually evaluate that as a measurement tool to see whether or not you can bet against the pack. And I think it is a negative thing. I don't want to say that FOMO is a good thing by any means, but if we can quantify it, and if we can almost use it and leverage it in our decision making, then maybe we can take advantage of it in certain patches.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is certainly a way you can weaponize FOMO, and that is kind of exploiting the fact that it's always kind of focused on the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. So it can mean that there are individuals sort of in kind of the template. I think that kind of going up against Haaland at the moment is a bit of an extreme example, but as you mentioned, and sometimes there may be kind of individual sort of occasions where you can battle that, but kind of the negative impact, if that doesn't go your way, could be potentially catastrophic.
Yeah.
But there are kind of individuals in the team who, after a while, you may think, well, hang on, this guy hasn't returned for a few weeks, and the whole crowd are looking at, you know, messing around with a different position. Someone like Mbeumo, for example. So he's really well owned for many people in the engaged community at the moment. I don't think I saw a single team on X that didn't have Mbeumo, and even wildcards, I think, included Mbeumo. I'm not saying to sell Mbeumo right now, but say there comes a point in the near future. I mean, he's done okay, But Brentford, I think Brentford have won one game, haven't they, this season?
One game so
Yeah, one
far,
game
yeah.
this season. They've not had the best, not done the best. And if there's kind of a continued decline in Brentford, but kind of people are still busy looking at the next thing, you might think to yourself, okay, well, this is an example of a player who people have kind of forgotten about that's kind of sat in the template. Can I take that on for a team that have got decent fixtures coming up? So, you know, Aston Villa, for example, a team that are high on many a fixture ticker at the moment. So you've got the RB there, of course, that you could then kind of buy in, and maybe, you know, even last year's game week one hero, Leon Bailey, could be an example of an individual you might pick up as well. But, you know, making that move at the right time could be a way that you then sort of weaponize that FOMO, because people are going to be looking elsewhere for other things. So maybe that would be a way to sort of bust it. But there's no sort of, you know, it's one of those where we all kind of want to have that kind of prescient foresight to be able to pick out the next big banger. And it's just sometimes there's that kind of opposition between doing that, putting your neck on the line, but also covering your backside. And, you know, with the likes of Alvarez, perhaps less so with the likes of Son, but definitely probably with, you know, the Chelsea players, for example, it definitely felt like, you know, you've got to make that sort of thing where if they do go off and they do sort of keep going at the rate they are going, then you want to kind of get in as early as you possibly can. And I think there's a good example this week as well. We're not going to come quite onto the double game week yet, but it was a very good example this week, of course, of the Newcastle defence. So as I said earlier on, those who did go without Newcastle defender or were without Newcastle defender this week and had a really bad time of it. And you can see already in the transfers that are being made that Newcastle defence is all the rage. And you can see why as well. I think Botman's kind of nearing the 300k mark in Trippier, 250k or something like that. And you've got easy sales, you know, the likes of Chilwell, 350,000 sales for him. Now he drops last night, and Botman rose last night, and I was the beneficiary of that rise and banking that 0.1 on Chilwell. It's a bit naughty. And Gusto as well, with that red card. And you know, It kind of comes to the next thing, doesn't it? Desperately Seeking Doozan asked us, people seem to be full of regret after jumping on player after player out there. Is jumping on Trippier going to be the next source of regret? But I think, Sam, this is another one, isn't it? Where you can kind of just stand behind it again. And it's kind of, it's whether we kind of see FOMO as being a pejorative thing, or whether, you know, there's another sort of contemplate option, which I guess we'll come on to in the FOMO busters. But for me, it feels very sort of, I'm kind of quite pro-template about the Newcastle side of it, less so about the Luton side, as we'll discuss. But with Newcastle defenders particularly, is I think it's rapidly approaching the point where having two of them is the best way to gain already out of them after just that 1 week, with all the wild cards being played. You've got kind of Trippier now up to 35% ownership, Botman kind of I think he's almost 25%, something like that, ownership, but he will be by the weekend. So any clean sheet for them, you're going to want two in order to, for there to be effective gain. Like it's crazy how quick the game moves, but that's one where I am pro template, and I've really kind of made the move early because like, so I need to bank that 0.1 on Trippier, and I look forward to his 12 pointer versus Fulham.
Yeah, I think with Newcastle defence, as another example of potential FOMO, I think you have to try and separate any feeling of FOMO with the decision itself. In this instance, Newcastle are one of the best defences in the league, both statistically and in terms of raw clean sheets over the last 14 months or so. Having single defence at the moment, we now know, won't give you that advantage over the crowd because they've effectively got 100% ownership in combination, if not more now. So having two is probably the only way to really stand out from the crowd there. It's whether or not you think you've got enough confidence in that Newcastle defence moving forwards. Well, when you look at the fixtures, especially coming up this week, that's a great fixture to jump on. And having two of them might not be such a bad idea just to try and give yourself that little bit of breathing room against the template. I don't think it'll be much breathing room for long. I don't think it'll be a massive advantage because I think a lot of people will end up on double Newcastle defence soon. But for the time being, until that wild card comes in to our minds around game week 8 or game week 9, I think you might still gain a little bit more from double Newcastle defence. There is FOMO attached to not doing it, but I think you can separate the FOMO side of it from what is just fundamentally probably just a good decision statistically based on the data we have available to us and the price points as well. If you're happy enough to avoid Trippier, we're looking at sub 5 million defenders in Burn and Botman that you can easily get to, especially against by selling someone like Chilwell, who isn't even starting at the moment. And when he comes on, he's getting himself a booking every single time, and what I'm now coining doing a Chilwell. So I think it's a pretty simple decision, and I don't think FOMO is the reason why people would be going for it, even though it could be arguably a factor. And I don't know whether we want to move on to Luton just yet, but I think that's a really good polarizing example of what I would consider to be a FOMO-based decision versus a statistical decision. And I don't really know what the crowd is doing yet in terms of which is the more popular move, but I would wager that probably backing the double game week striker is going to be more popular than bringing in a Newcastle defender this week. But maybe I'm wrong looking at your suggestive shake of the head.
No, nowhere near. I mean, you've got
really?
Morris.
Wow.
Yeah, Morris is the fifth most brought in player, but I mean, Trippier and Botman both are the most sort of bought in guys. I think it's just a lot of it's kind of availability as well, like availability of individual to move out. So those people still were carrying Chilwell. His ownership was pretty high, and Gusto as well. I think there's a lot of probably frustrated Jackson owners who are probably moving over to Morris now, those who didn't buy Alvarez last week. But I mean, Alvarez himself is still tracking pretty decently in the market forces data. So just below Morris actually. And Luton is just an interesting example, really, of like, yes, we all love double game week, et cetera, it's just there are so many of these which absolutely honk, like those poorer teams in double game week never really excite me very much. Luton are fifth from bottom at the moment for XG overall as a team, which is, you know, that's as expected. Carlton Morris is 98th overall for non-pen XG at 1.1. In terms of non-pen XG, he's being outscored by the likes of Levi Colwill, Nathan Patterson, James Garner, Solly March. God, he's rubbish. Willie Bolly. The list goes on. And it's one of those where, yes, okay, it's a decent double, but I think it's also a decent double for the teams that are playing Luton. And it's one where, you know, if you're wildcarding or if you've got an easy way to get to him, I don't begrudge you doing it, especially if you've got Jackson. You're like, well, I don't really fancy Alvarez, or you already have Alvarez and you've got kind of a 3-4-3 sort of thing going on. Fine, absolutely do it. But it's one of those double game weeks where I think a lot of it is kind of that sort of butterfly effect from the decisions you've already made in the past. If you haven't wildcarded recently with this kind of game in mind, or you know, if you've been sat on one or two players from the very start, like Kabore or something like that, that's kind of, I think that suffices for this week. I really do. I mean, maybe I'll be proved wrong and maybe Morris will go mental, which would be great for me because I have him in my draft team. But I don't know. I can't see him reaching the heights of Mitrovic last year for that double. I think he got to about 100 and I think he just got to kind of near 100% EO, something like that, which is kind of quite rare for a cheap player who's got a double. It's a worthy punt, but it's not one that I'm going to go out of my way and go out of my plans to bring this player in. And even if I was wildcarding this week, I think the way I look at it always is that unless I've got like Morris 1 week, I'm going to plan to move him on to somebody else. I just don't really like it. Are you worried?
A little. I think looking around the community at the moment, I am actually quite surprised that he's not more favoured and bought in than he has been. My personal opinion is that I don't really think I need to go for him, especially because I've got Alvarez. I don't think he's a problem. And I think it's 50-50 whether Alvarez can even potentially outscore him this week. But it is still two matches. He is on penalties. I think if he wasn't on penalties, I wouldn't even be slightly worried. But because that's such a noisy statistic and you can get a penalty against anyone, like we saw this week, all he needs is that one instance, that one chance created, that one error in the box. And all of a sudden he could be looking at a 10-point haul across the two games. And that's without anything in open play. That's without two penalties, one in each match, for instance. So these things can happen. But looking just at the statistics, his non-pen XG per 90, I think, is 0.19 at the moment. So if I was to double that for per 180, then we're still looking at under 0.4, I think it is, XG across what we'd expect two game weeks to be. And even against weaker teams, I still think those teams are going to be targeting 3 points against Luton. We might be looking at one or two goals across the game week for Luton in this fixture. And I might be proven wrong. That is definitely a possibility. And for someone on penalties, I'm always going to be slightly worried. But unless it fits your team structure, unless you've got a Jackson, or unless you've got that third striker slot that you can easily move to him without sacrificing the likes of an Alvarez or a Watkins if you've held this long with the fixtures to come, I don't think Morris really fits my structure, even if I'm wildcarding in two game weeks' time. I don't really want to hold him next week. So I know that that's a transfer I'm going to want to make. So there are instances where maybe he'll fit your structure, but personally in my team, I don't think I can get to him without making my side look worse in the long term. That doesn't mean I'm not worried. And I think FOMO is creeping in a little bit, because who doesn't love a double game week, especially for a penalty taker. But I think in this specific situation, I'm going to avoid it and just hope that he doesn't get one of those penalties or any sort of lucky return in the double game week.
Yeah, plus Haaland versus Wolves is
that
is what it is. Yeah, I'm not concerned, and if I don't know, maybe it will blow up in our faces, but you know, at least the reasoning was right. Which is just how we go with these sorts of things. So it sounds like we're kind of pro template on a Newcastle defender, which is relief for me. So I've really kind of gone there, and maybe contemplate on Luton for now. I'm happy with Kabore. Been playing really well, actually. One of the few Luton players with greatest respect who looks up to standard. Got fouled for penalty this week. So there we go. In terms of contemplate, though, so going against the template, there are, I think, some FOMO busters out there. I think this is particularly relevant in midfield, especially if you are a Madison owner. If he does turn out to be injured, that might be something to be worried about. I love the idea that 250,000 people have sold Rodri. So, you know, that's not great. You know, there's so many people who own Rodri for some reason in FPL. So there's loads of midfield sort of moves going around. And even if you're in Sterling and you're just kind of like, you know what, I just want to get rid of Chelsea. And there are quite a few options out there. Jeff Pedraas is underrated this week. And if you did want to move out of the move with the crowd rut, I think there are a few ways you could possibly go. The two kind of standout ones for me are whether you target Sheffield United or whether you target Burnley with the team that has just whooped Sheffield United. I think that's kind of the two ones you might go with. So target Sheffield United, obviously, you start off with the likes of Bowen, who's diving header. That was sensational.
Yeah, that was great.
Sea level on the floor, effectively. And JWP, who scored a diving header last week, and especially for wildcarding soon next to Sheffield United and then Newcastle. Bowen is 10th for non-pen XGI. On the other hand, with Howe, Eddie Howe, that is, saying that Barnes' injury doesn't look too good. You look immediately at Anthony Gordon, who came on, played very well, pretty electric in that game. Really nice little run of fixtures. Burnley, West Ham, Crystal Palace and Wolves, just 5.6 million. 13th as well for non-pen XGI, which surprised me. Very encouraging underlying data thus far. Super direct. So I think either of them, especially with the crowd's eyes fixed on a Newcastle defender, or maybe Carlton Morris, will really rise up the consideration scale as we reach kind of fever pitch on Friday. Either of them could be kind of quite interesting little pickups, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I was really impressed by Gordon yesterday. I thought he was fantastic. And I think since the move, he hasn't really had this much of an impressive run in the side. So I really fancy him down that left wing, especially with Barnes looking out for a little while. Newcastle all of a sudden do look like a team to be targeting with the fixtures to come. And Burnley, but I think because Sheffield United are the team that have just been pumped, that it's easy to look at targeting them. But until this week, they were actually probably the fixture out of the three promoted sides that I wouldn't be as keen on targeting. They actually looked a little bit tighter, whereas Burnley have played a very open brand of football. And I think, let's not forget how open they can be. Gordon against a Burnley could be sensational. So could a Callum Wilson, if we know that he's starting, by the way, as well. So Newcastle players for this game week, I think, fantastic. It'll be hard to get more than one going forward with a lot of us going double Newcastle defence soon, and you don't want to lock yourself out of that, I guess. But Gordon, if we get news that Barnes is out for a little while, could be fantastic value for money and a bit of an enabler to try and get you across to a Salah in a couple of weeks as well, if you're not already there. So maybe he could be the guy. I also really like Bowen as well, but big shout out to James Ward-Prowse, because Sheffield United looked absolutely awful defending set pieces all game. So I kind of fancy him for this week. He will be licking his lips at the prospect of Sheffield United now. So maybe if you're looking at wildcarding in a couple of game weeks, he could be your man. Outside of that, Neto's look pretty good as well. I think the fixtures just sadly aren't quite there for him. But if you back him regardless, then fair enough, he's very cheap. I think I'd probably favour Gordon over him, though, to be honest. I think we've got a question on that in just a second. And then Everton players as well. Maybe they're pretty high on chances created. I think they're second in the league for big chances created so far this season. Abdoulaye Doucouré could be interesting with Luton and Bournemouth to come. You could equally be looking at one of the strikers if you don't fancy Carlton Morris. And if you fancy a punt on a Calvert-Lewin or a Beto, then maybe you could be in the money there with some good fixtures. I don't think I'm brave enough to do that. But yeah, some differentials for you there. I think out of all of the ones we mentioned, Gordon would be the one I'm most interested in. Bowen just after that, and James Ward-Prowse would certainly be in the mix as well.
Yeah, so answered Nave Jacobson question on the Pedro Neto or Anthony Gordon. Which one would you choose to enable Salah? I think it's definitely Gordon, a better team, better attack. Neto, yes, more talismanic, but in a lesser team. I do like the idea of Abdoulaye Doucouré, actually, for some reason. I think it was just every time I've looked at him, he's gone and scored, but I've ignored him. 15th for SGI thus far this season. Scored a goal this week. And with Luton and Bournemouth the next two, if you're looking to wildcard in nine, one of those sort of ideal sort of short-term punch, playing the most advanced in the three, there's a Garner and a Nana behind him, and just kind of letting him get involved and wreak havoc. I think there's definitely there's some scope, I suppose, there to make some changes ahead of next game week or next couple of game weeks. But it very much kind of depends on your horizon at the moment, whether you're kind of thinking, well, all right, I'm trying to manoeuvre myself towards owning Salah by game week 9 and 10. I do think it's one of those sort of milestone points of the season for a lot of people. Like, even though, yes, loads of people have wildcarded, we know that. Loads of people kind of may not even want Salah, reasoning that other players are going off. I think especially kind of as a hangover from this week when you've had the likes of, you know, Son, Saka, Foden, etc., all kind of matching or beating Salah, you may be thinking, oh, you know what, it's fine, you know, I'll be all right. But no, when it comes to game week 9 and you're staring at Liverpool having Everton, Nottingham Forest and Luton in the next three, I think everyone's going to think differently then. And fear of Mo and FOMO, hey, and it's going to be something which is going to come into the mixture a lot, which is why a Gordon probably make a lot of sense for somebody, just betting that he stays there for the long term. But if you're not an owner of Salah now, I just wonder, should current owners kind of feel smug or be worried about someone they didn't own? And because it's every wildcard team I put together, and if you see the Salah teams, there's always something missing there. There's removing Saka, which I saw a lot of people do this week. Or there's kind of having to go without a Trippier, which again, I saw those people going this week, going with kind of Shaw and Botman, was I think was the most kind of popular combination. I think wild cards this week did get very unlucky, to be fair. But it's one of those where, I don't know. It kind of increasingly looks like now that the FOMO would be wild carding to own Salah in game week 9 for those two games, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think with Salah, it's never been a question of whether or not he's a fantastic player. It's whether he's value for money at 12.5 if we're not going to captain him. And until now, with the fixtures that Haaland had, I don't think he was going to be a captain other than game week 2 against Bournemouth, was it? For a lot of people. So I think owners who have had him since the start should be feeling a little bit smug because he's returned in every single week and he is undoubtedly one of the best players you can possibly pick in FPL. It's just in the for the players who haven't picked him from the start, it was a case that they thought they could back against him with value elsewhere. What can we get out of 2 8 to 9 million mids versus Salah and a budget enabler? Well, maybe we're starting to now figure out who those budget enablers could be. Anthony Gordon raising his hand at the moment. Maybe there's one or two others around, especially up front as well, that look a little bit cheaper that maybe we can use to help balance out the squad and not lose too much value elsewhere and take 1 million out of every single position to get to Salah. But until now, especially in my point of view, it hasn't really been clear who that budget enabler might be to help unlock Salah and keep the rest of the squad balanced. And even at this point, even if you go for an Anthony Gordon now, long term, I'm not completely secure on his minutes at the moment. So if you've already got Salah in situ, you're undoubtedly doing quite well right now because he's absolutely hauling in points in two double-digit hauls in a row now. And I still feel like his ceiling's higher. I still feel like there's another level to him. So I am jealous. I do have FOMO on him and I do want to use my wildcard to get to him. But looking at wildcards week to week at the moment, I'm losing too much of the midfield to make it worthwhile right now. And there are still good fixtures for the likes of Spurs to come. And you're looking at Son and Madison, even Chelsea have decent fixtures for the next couple. So maybe it's just not quite the time yet. Mm-hmm. But if you've already got him, you're certainly feeling good about life. It's just whether or not you've missed out on other players 4 or 5 million lower in price who are getting nearly as many points as him, and you've been able to get in two or three of them rather than just Salah.
I mean, something to bear in mind about Salah is that, again, we've kind of seen a bit of a slight change in role. So he's second for non-pen XGI this season. He's actually top, Sam, for expected assists. He's top way ahead of Bruno and Purvis Estupiñan. Those two are joint second at the moment with 3.5. His actual non-pen XG is about 2. Darwin Nunez is higher than Salah. Salah's only kind of 18th this season for non-pen XG. So I think the way he's in the Liverpool 2.0, Klopp 2.0 seems to be set up is Salah kind of providing maybe less attacking, less shooting and more chance creation compared to what we've seen in the past. I mean, that may change with personnel and how things sort of alter, but it's one to keep an eye on, especially if you don't own Salah at the moment. Yes, he's on penalties, but it's very sort of, it's almost like a Bruno Fernandes sort of profile in the data, at least. I'm aware there could be different players, et cetera, et cetera. But something to keep an eye on, especially if you kind of, we may get to game week 9, get week 10 and have been on a decent run and just think, you know what, I can just move Alvarez out for Darwin and kind of hope that I can quote unquote cover Salah. Because if you're paying 12.5 for a player who is kind of more of an assist threat than a goal threat outside of scoring penalties, and there's someone who is, what's that, 5 million cheaper in the same team who seems to be getting the goal scoring opportunities, perhaps that could be a way around it. Perhaps you may be able to resist the FOMO there as well. I don't know. I mean, at this point, I think it's very unlikely that most people will be able to resist the FOMO. But if you haven't wildcarded yet and you've been playing with wildcard teams and you do currently own the likes of Son and Trippier, just try to fit Salah into a wildcard team with everybody else that you may possibly want. And you'll soon find it's actually quite difficult. Whereas it's much easier if you shove Darwin in. Or obviously, you've got to see the second international break coming up, isn't it? So don't know if he's going to be playing anyway against Everton. And maybe a Jota the Slotter moment. But just one to bear in mind there, really, about Salah. Maybe we'll be able to kick the can even further down the road. I feel like he's inevitable. It'd be very kind of interesting if there's a whole season where I don't own him. I'm sure that's not going to happen. It's one that maybe just tempered by the relief of this week. I don't feel as sort of that big compulsion to sign him right now, just because he's so much more expensive than everybody else. And as I was saying, everybody else seems to be doing all right as well. Well, it sounds like broadly it's a bit of a pro template for the Newcastle boys coming in, and I'm not sure that we're going to call it FOMO, just because I bought Botman in. I think a lot of that was just because every sort of wild card that I was looking at did include owning Botman. So I was like, okay, I'm going to own him for less, and I didn't want Chilwell anymore. Yes, okay, he may well start and smash, but he will start and he will smash it against Fulham. But like, I don't know, I kind of just felt like the race was run. I didn't really want to be messing around with Chelsea anymore. Didn't want to be messing around with with all that sort of the roulette, I suppose, of who's going to play, and kind of thought, well, I'll get an defender here. So I think we'll probably go with that sort of that side of the template being a good thing. Both kind of fairly not buying the hype, I guess, thus far about Morris. He's not El Fenomenino. He's not the new Ronaldo. He's just a decentish, high-level championship striker. I think it's quite an interesting way of looking at it. But it just sounds like I wonder how long FOMO will be here to stay. I think it's just really interesting because of the way the whole years come out, really, because you've got price not really being a factor apart from for Salah, it seems, and maybe Trippier as well. And you could easily, if you kind of run someone else's team as well, you could easily have a completely different midfield. And this week, you know, all 10 players would have scored equitably. I can't really remember how something like that before. So, yeah, interesting to see how it develops. Hopefully, you know, there'll be more opportunities to break free of the FOMO. Hello. Do you want the bold claims?
Let's do it. And since I was last on the pod, I've got one. I'm off the board, which was a little bit gutting because I was off the pod when I got the opportunity to celebrate it. But I did get one last week. I didn't this week. I don't think you did either.
Nope.
What was it? What was your bold claim for this week?
My one was Newcastle clean sheet was going to go. One was Burnley to beat United. Nick was the listener claims representative last week. And he predicted that Jackson Sellers get punished. Quite the opposite, get rewarded. Maybe we should take listener point off because that's such a
a negative point.
So far from the prediction.
To Jackson to get suspended after 6 game weeks for 5 different dissent yellow cards is quite the achievement. I don't know how that's even possible. So at the moment it's Tom nil, me 1, listeners 1. But long season to go, plenty of bold claims left to go. So shall we move on to where we're at for this week? And yep. I think I'm first. So I don't know how bold this one is. I really back myself on this one. I think 5 plus goals in Villa Brighton seems fairly likely. I quite like that one. I might even have a little flutter on it myself. Both teams scoring a lot at the moment. Both teams a little bit leaky at the back as well. Think this could be a bit of a barn burner. I think this is also the first game of the game week as well, so we could be off to a really interesting start to game week 7. That's what I'm backing this week. 5 plus goals in Villa Brighton. Not sure which way it will go though.
Yeah, so is it four free ones in a row for Brighton either way, having the first 2 game weeks of the season before 1? So it won't take very much for that to happen. Yeah, I can see that one happening. I've gone a bit more bold, I think. Luton to score once in double game week 7 and lose both matches. I think I'm just not particularly enamoured with them at all. We haven't even mentioned any Burnley players, have we? It's just indicative of the low feeling I've got about this particular double game week. So yeah, Luton to score once, double game week 7, inevitably sort of a Morris sort of penalty or something, I'm sure, and for them to lose both matches. I mean, I'm just not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Everton beat them and then they lost to Burnley. I just would not be shocked by that at all. So that's where I'm going to go. And then listener questions we will ask for on Friday. Great. Not listener questions, listener claims we'll ask for on Friday. Rightio, on to questions though, the listener questions which we will take now. Just a few this week. Neil Gupta, are we too fixture obsessed this season? Should we revert to looking at form instead? I suppose it's one of those where it's early doors, isn't it, Sam? It's quite difficult to give much beyond just kind of, okay, there are good fixtures coming up. Everything's kind of quite up in the air at the moment. I'm just going to kind of go with that.
Yeah, I think good fixtures do help to breed form as well. So in the early season, when you have limited information on these players, following the fixtures as an indicator of where form could come from next is a good way of getting ahead of the crowd, as we mentioned earlier. But there is also something to be said for just looking at pure form as well, how good a player is, how well they're doing, especially if we know that from seasons past as well. If we've got plenty of information on a player, regardless of the fixtures, being a high quality player that we know and we trust, Saka being a great example of that sort of player, then we can probably ignore the fixtures that little bit more and just back the player over the fixtures. But I think early season, I'm pretty happy to look at the fixtures as an indicator of where we can go next. Not the be all and end all, but certainly a factor in my decision making. But it's one of several different factors that you look in, look at when making a decision. But there are a lot of teams that are pretty easy to target at the moment. The promoted sides, all three of them look like sides that you could easily pick a player from those fixtures ahead, looking ahead. If they've got two of those promoted sides in the next three or four, then maybe backing a player that's going up against them is a good way of trying to get ahead of the crowd. But no, it's certainly not the be all and end all form. If you believe in the term form or not, a player is high quality against anyone, then I think you can still go for them regardless of the fixtures. But I certainly wouldn't dismiss fixtures altogether.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think it goes back for me to price being pretty irrelevant. Like it just creates a sort of liquidity in the market to sort of just break into work me for a second, because like we are like kids in the sweet shop which is having a giveaway at the moment. Like we're able to move players in and out as we please. Maybe we are kind of concerned a little bit about individuals kind of having like cash stored, but it's not that much. Like I don't really think any player has risen that much, have they, this season thus far? And especially midfield, like you've just got so much capacity to buy in the next shiny toy gun every time, especially because Salah's not been in the conversation. It's starting to be, but so far this season it's just been so easy, as we've seen for the likes of Mbeumo, the likes of Sterling, the likes of Son, and Madison as well. It's just been so easy to bring these players in at will that I think it's just kind of meant that we've kind of just used fixtures to be kind of hopefully a predictor for what's going to happen. And that's fine. That's kind of what you always do, really. I mean, there's those people who fall down on either side. I'm kind of actually in the middle. Sometimes I do kind of think it's best to keep hold of a player if they're performing well. I've had so many bad experiences of throwing the baby out the bathwater and selling players just when they're coming into quote unquote bad fixtures, only to find that they've kind of continued it. A few years ago, for selling Kane and Son on a wild card, I remember doing on the early wild card when they were having quite, quite tougher fixtures, and they continued to drip along. That's 2018-19. It was those two, Bruno and Salah, in the 200 clubs. So, I mean, yeah, an extreme example. But I think that we kind of see that an awful lot. So, yeah, I don't think we're doing anything wrong at the moment by being too fixture obsessed thus far, just because the season's in its infancy. But as it goes further along, I guess the decisions get tougher, don't they, Sam? I'm trying to kind of, it's goldfish bowl brain, isn't it? Like you forget what happened last season so quickly. But I'm sure towards kind of the 20s and 30s, you were starting to look at players and think, well, you know, he served me well, but is it time for him to go? Because another player is coming into good fixtures. I guess it's more of a question later on when we've got kind of a more verifiable body of data. I remember that. Yeah, I think that's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the art of FPL, isn't it? That's how you get to a good rank at the end of the season, making those decisions when a player is about to go off the boil and find a player just before they start hitting those heights. And fixtures are a good indicator of where we can maybe look at changing things up and refreshing our side. But it's also knowing when not to make those calls and when not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, like you mentioned. And getting those decisions right more often than not will be what leads you to a good rank at the end of the season. So there's no be all and end all answer for this, that you can either, yes, I will also always attack fixtures, or no, I will always just back the players that have served me well so far. It's picking those battles individually and trying to find other indicators of whether you think a player is probably going to be worth getting rid of, or whether, regardless of the fixtures, you think that they're just going to continue performing no matter what. And that is, in my view, what gets you that really good rank at the end of the season.
Yeah, definitely. All about timing, and mine has always been rather off. Next question, FPL Death Star. Is Raheem Sterling just a total jerk? Seriously, what do we do with the man? Yes, very, very. One of those questions that I guess many of us have been wondering ourselves after buying in Sterling
too late after he's played Luton and suffering through. I mean, he has been unlucky, got unlucky this week as well. Haven't watched match of the day and not to register again. But if, I mean, looking at the data, it's in terms of like non-pen per 90 data, it's kind of nowhere really. Non-pen XGI, he's doing all right. You know, he's kind of in the 20s and being outstated for that by the Duke Ducore that we mentioned earlier on, Dom Solanke, Awani, I mean, all of these sort of individuals. And it's safe to say it's just not really happening for Chelsea at the moment. And with Jackson out, I guess Breuer's going to have to play. I don't know what his fitness is going to be. And there were times in the last game where you saw Sterling sort of being forced to lead the line a little bit, which it's pretty preposterous, really, because of how little he is. I'm likely going to be benching Sterling this week. I think I've got... We'll talk about it when we come on to it, but at the moment, he looks like the one who's going to be the odd one out for me. And I'm kind of all right with that. In fact, like, I'm kind of quiet quitting him, because next week, if all goes to plan, I'll be moving him on for a 1 week pump before a wild card in nine. But you know, that's all up in the air. I'm very tempted to bench him this week and just kind of think, you know what, trust my eyes a little bit, because that's all we've got to go on at the moment. Yes, I know Fulham are... Yes, not the best team in the world. I think they're doing all right, aren't they, in terms of XGA? They're not far from bottom for XGA. So no,
yeah,
not.
I was about to say, I think they're quite low.
And Chelsea are doing fairly well, actually, for XG, but haven't actually managed to turn that into anything yet. It's just the five goals from 11.5 XG this season. So, I mean... there is an element of being due, but also you can kind of see why it's not happened for Chelsea, I suppose. And maybe it's kind of one of those stats, not anomalies, like a ketchup bottle, which will kind of filter itself out. But yeah, at the moment, he's one that I'm kind of going to just convince myself doesn't exist. He'll be stuck on my first bench and probably will sell on next week for a 1 week punt. What do you reckon?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair enough. I'd have no problem with anyone selling him at this point. He is very frustrating to own right now. I think if I didn't have him, he wouldn't be anywhere near my consideration. But the fact is, I do have him in my team at the moment. So I'm trying to look for any reason to keep him when maybe there are other issues I need to resolve first, especially with the next couple of fixtures still being pretty decent until I wildcard. I think there are other avenues I can explore. And the most recent fixture, game week 6, a lot of it won't show up on the data, but he was unlucky not to get the assist for the offside goal as well. So that could have been points. And then he was also through on goal, did get saved, but that was also called offside as well. So that won't show up in the data either. So I think that there are chances coming for him. And I think if I had no other moves to make in the next couple of weeks, he would probably be leaving anyway, regardless of the chances that he's creating. But because there are just those little green shoots and the XG for Chelsea isn't bad at the moment, I think there are other things that I need to resolve first. And hopefully me holding on to him is a differential that pays off in the next couple of weeks. But I can completely see why people are looking to get rid of him at the moment, because he is being incredibly frustrating. Maybe not as bad as Chilwell, because Chilwell's not even starting the matches anymore, but certainly of that ilk. And yeah, I the only reason he's probably staying for me is because I'm almost using it as a differential, because people are getting rid of him and I've got other moves I want to prioritise, especially next week. I'll come on to my potential transfers in a moment, but I think with the fixtures and the fact that his stats aren't bad, and maybe the fact that some of his moments aren't actually showing up on the stats because of marginal offsides, I'm going to try and hold on to him in the hope that we see something better from him in the next two game weeks. But yeah, I mean, he is a jerk and I want him to score very, very soon. Otherwise, that was a really big mistake a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it certainly was. Right, so FPL Koboloi, quick one. Start Burnt the Hero Leno versus Chelsea or Alphonse Areola versus Sheffield United? He says Alphonse Areola has not kept a clean sheet for him yet. Yeah, I mean, I looked at the goalkeeper data, the post save XG prevented sort of thing, and Areola is actually
we all know Leno's very good at the very good at them saves, but he and Areola are really, really close in that data. So I'd just be minded to go with the fixture there. As we mentioned, Chelsea are still doing all right in terms of the underlying XG data, whereas Sheffield United are not. So I'd probably just stick in Areola there. Anything to add?
Yeah, same as you. I don't think Leno against Chelsea is a terrible fixture to have at the moment, with Chelsea flattering to deceive, but overall, yeah, I'd back the fixture. Sheffield United, I don't look like a team that are up to much going forward. Again, they'll probably now hit 3 or 4 now I've said that, but looking purely at the data, I'd back Areola.
Cool. All right. 3 more questions. So Vardy boys, is it still worth bringing Alvarez if you're tripled up on City already? No, I'd leave that one. I think it's Foden and Diaz and Haaland. Nah, leave that one. FPL Mayor, if you can only have one, would you have Son or Salah? Well, that's interesting. Where would you lean?
Yeah, this is a tough one. When I saw this one coming, I did have a second trying to figure out where my thoughts are out on this. I think because I think I'm wildcarding around game week 9, I'd be prioritising Son first. I do quite fancy him in this game week as well. If you've got him, I think you're in a great position against Liverpool. And then obviously Luton in game week 8 as well is a captainable asset then. And he does look explosive. We know how good a finisher he is. And crucially, he's 3 to 3.4, 3.3 million less than Salah. And I think that is the difference at the moment. He's much more accessible for us, whereas Salah probably means you're ripping apart your side if you don't already have him and making 2 or 3 transfers to accommodate him. In the long term, that will probably pay off and pay dividends. But in the short term, especially in my personal situation where I'm looking at wildcarding soon, I would probably favour Son right now. And then if we revisited that question around game week 9 or game week 10, that answer then probably changes to Salah, because I can get to him without having to completely rip apart my team, take a -4, -8 to get there. And the fixtures will favour him better at that point. But for now, probably Son.
Yeah, I think the same. I can, especially if Son stays at the number 9 and Spurs keep producing the chance, especially if they can keep Madison fit. I can see Son doing again very well this year. A 200 point club. Again, could match Salah for the price. You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Like, we all love an out-of-position midfielder. And as Sam said, there's a price difference as well to factor in. So the value is kind of squarely in Son's favour if he continues playing at number 9 role, which I'm pretty sure he's nailed down for the first 70 minutes until he gets subbed off around the 75-minute mark, which seems to be kind of what's going on at the moment. But yeah, I think it would be Son for me. For now, I don't know whether that's kind of going to persist throughout the whole season. As you say, Sam, there's going to be an element of reconsideration around game week 9 and 10 when the fixtures change. But given how Spurs are playing, it really does feel like having one or two of their midfielders and principally Son is good. I mean, their fixture run is like, they don't really get kind of a net bad fixture run up until game week 32, something like that. Like, they've got a really good run of fixtures. So yeah, I mean, he's one that I like, because he's locked out of most wildcarders teams. Like, I haven't really seen anyone who's included him on their wildcard, and I think that would be very difficult for someone who's wildcard already to get Son, because you likely have, you know, a lot of your resources tied up in Salah. I think he's quite a nice differential for those of us who haven't wildcarders, and it may be that by the time we get to game week 9, game week 10, that the landscape might have shifted, and may think, oh, you know what, this guy, because he smashed it against Arsenal, he scored against, I wouldn't bet against him scoring against Liverpool, and then you got Luton. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if suddenly, you know, we've got to make other sacrifices, or maybe just kind of eschew the wildcard altogether to keep him. So yep, I mean, I know what Salah is, and at the moment I'm with you. It's probably Son over the next 2, and then just see how it goes from there.
Interesting.
Final question this week, Dr. FPL, rank your carbs from favourite to least favourite. Bread, rice, pasta, potato and noodles. Should we just say our favourite and least favourite here rather than ranking? Because we're over the hour already.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, I love all of these. If I could have all 5, I would. Anyone who knows me through like secondary school, college, and then especially university knows that I lived off of pasta. So pasta would probably be my favourite.
It's close between potatoes and noodles. I think you can eat. I feel if I could eat noodles every day, all day long. I just love like ramen. I think I have it every time I'm drunk. It's like the perfect sort of foods for me. It's just like it's nice salty broth of nice ramen in it. And these days I have a little ramyun as well. It has a little bit of spice to it. But oh yeah, so good. But I do love potatoes. Like I love jack potatoes and love that kind of. And you can, it's so versatile as well. You can do so many good things with potatoes. So yeah, it's closely in those two. I like bread, but I don't like, love bread. If that makes sense. It kind of it performs a function to bookend nice things. So and it's also kind of the most fascinating for the least sort of niceness to it. So probably that'd be my least favorite, I think. So yeah, for you?
Yeah, probably. I can't believe we're having a serious conversation about this. Right, I think if it was potatoes without the chips side to it, it'd probably be potatoes at the bottom, but. All of that comes into it, so yeah, probably just about bread for me, but to be honest I love them all. Anything carby I'll have, so terrible. Great question.
Yeah, as I've gotten older I've had to try to add more exercise in to placate my love of carbs, so there we go. Right, transfers and captains, endless madness,
let's do it. Right, you're first on this week, I believe.
Yep, I'm first. So I've already done Mr. Chilwell out, so Mr. Botman in. So that doubles me up on Newcastle defence at the back. I've got Kabore as my sole double game week interest. Estupinian in midfield, Son, Bumo, Rashford and Saka. I'm playing the 4-4-2 this week with Haaland, captain and Alvarez. That means that Sterling is on the bench. I'm not sure that's going to remain that way. I've got a choice between Sterling, Estupinian and Bumo, I think, out of those for who I put on the bench. I'm not sure I can bench Rashford, even though and he's not the sort of eye testy one we didn't really talk about, but he's another one that I think is kind of, he wouldn't be in a wild card team that I put together, put it that way. I think it's just about Sterling at the moment who goes on the bench, just because of it's a bit cowardly, but because he's got lower Rio, so it doesn't matter if he does well. But it would matter if he did well for me, but it matters less that he does well compared to if I bench Estupinian, who, if he gets one tack and returns in amongst the bonus immediately, and then you've got Bumo and a misfiring Brentford too. So yeah, I mean, I hate bench headaches. I hate having done this to myself, but it's just what happens when you've got Kabore there to play with. And I thought that, as I said earlier on, having that double Newcastle defence is the only way you were going to gain. So cue a Burnley goal, of course. But yeah, so that's me this week. I'm sure I'll have a few more thoughts regarding what happens with that benching headache. And you know, if there is an injury in the midweek, I'm aware of the risks. I've got a wild card to play, so I'll be wild card chicken continuing on over the next kind of few weeks. So yeah, that's me. What about you?
Nice. Well, I'm still 3-5-2. So Onana in goal, ahead of Turner. I think that's a fairly straightforward call this week. Estupinian, Trippier and Kabore at the back. At the moment, I'm benching Saliba away at Bournemouth, which doesn't feel great, but I just don't think the upside is there. Maybe keep a clean sheet, but I'd prefer to back Estupinian for the attacking returns. I think there's marginally a better chance of that over a clean sheet away at Bournemouth for Arsenal. So I think I'm pretty set on that. And also he's a nice first bencher to have in case any injuries do crop up. In midfield, I've gone 5 across. So it's Mbeumo, Saka. I am starting Sterling. I'm praying that he starts to actually return against Fulham. Rashford and Foden away at Wolves. And then up front, completing my Man City triple attack is Alvarez and Haaland with the armband. On my bench, like I said, I've also got Odoghi and Mbama, who are going to be going nowhere. Pretty easy benches for this week. I'm looking at rolling the transfer. I could get to a Morris for free. I could sell Sterling for a Bowen, which could be interesting. And equally, if I hear news that Foden is randomly benched for whatever reason, then maybe that's a move I make. Or I could move a week early on getting in a Spurs player, because next week I'm looking at using both my free transfers before the wild card on Madison and Son, for example, against Luton. And I think the payoff of that over bringing in Morris this week or Bowen this week, for example, is arguably higher, or bringing in a Newcastle defender at the moment, especially when I'm pretty happy with the three I'm playing at the back anyway. So I think I'm rolling at, as it stands, but I'll have a look at the upside of some of those different differentials we mentioned earlier, because one or two of them do sound pretty tempting, especially if Foden does get benched randomly, which we know he's always, always a chance. So I'll keep my eyes on moves, put it that way.
With the injuries, you should be right there. No, it'd be interesting to see if you don't. I think maybe when you do look at it, it'd be interesting to see what you think when you see that loads of people end up with double Newcastle defence. But that's kind of what I was anticipating a little bit. But yes, you end up with, who do I bench? Which is kind of where you end up with me. It makes sense that you're rolling it, though. I've got Son in situ, and I'll probably get Maddison if, as long as he's fit. So yeah, similar paths, but just slightly different teams. Cool. All right. Hopefully that gets us out of our red arrow malaise.
I really hope so. Well, on that note, thank you everyone for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find us online on X at WGTA_FPL or myself at FPL Pricey, and on Instagram /threads at WGTA.FPL, or again, I'm FPL Pricey on there as well. If you enjoyed the pod, please, if you could do one or all of the following, such as giving us a follow on those socials, giving the pod a 5-star rating wherever you're listening would be absolutely fantastic. And if you're watching on YouTube, if you could leave a like and subscribe to the channel, that would be absolutely fantastic and really, really appreciated. It really does help get the pod out there. Finally, the mini league code, which we are still leaving open until game week 10, so you've still got a little while to get involved there. The code is MINLUD. So do make sure you join in that before we close it off in game week 10.
Cool. Thanks, Sam. I hope we assist you this week to think about FOMO. I've got FOMO. I really want a beer, but I'm not going to be able to do it. I've got to be up in B places tomorrow morning, sadly. But next week, Sam, I'll be back to my usual barnstorming beard up self. Yes, speak to you next week. Have a good week. And yes, enjoy.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Podcast Network.